Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Space Explored Podcast. I'm Seth Drakowski, as always, and with me is Jared Sanders.
What's going on, guys? Another week in space.
another week in space. Man, this week has been interesting. It's a couple kind of like left hooks on news that we saw that didn't see coming. And some things that I think we all saw coming. So it's kind of been a weird week.
Yeah, not to mention there was some stuff backed up from post-hurricane. So I think it, you know, a lot sort of got crammed into a short, compressed timeline.
Speaking of the hurricane, we need some sort of audio for our Artemis 1 update, because at this point everyone's used to our Artemis 1 update. And here, breaking news. We're sorry to break into your scheduled programming for Artemis 1 update of it's now November.
Yes.
Which not surprised by that one at all. It was kind of be a hard stretch to get out the October window anyways. So now they announced that everything's fine. The rocket survived the hurricane. There's no damage. There was a slight fire apparently when it moved in, but don't worry. Not with Artemis. Or apparently it was just a panel not acting up or something like that. Everything's fine. So they checked it out. They're going to replace the batteries on the flight termination system, like they said before. And it was going to be, they said it was going to be a tight squeeze to hit that October window. So mid-November is the new launch date. That starts on November 12th.
The new target. Let's call it a launch target. Let's not call it a launch date.
The launch window of opportunity, of possibility. Maybe. I mean, how many more ways I can say it might or may not happen?
I know. I'm kind of upset. It was going to be a pumpkin rocket, and now it's going to be a turkey rocket.
They need
if we get
it
closer
brown.
To Christmas, will they repaint it?
Back to... Yeah, they got to paint it. They got to paint it brown. Yeah. Red, white, and blue. Yeah, let's do it. Or just red and white. Red and green, you know. Green rocket,
candy
good.
Candy cane.
Candy cane. Yeah, candy cane. It's a candy cane rocket. The window opens on November 12th, goes through November 27th. Now, here's the kicker that everyone is not necessarily cool with. I think it was a similar over October as well. The times for the launch are actually... So the first part of that window, the times are like early morning. We're talking like midnight to like 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. So pitch black, dark.
Yeah, sad time for a lot of viewers, right?
Yeah, no one wants to see. I mean, okay, if you're on stream, I don't think it's really going to matter that much.
Right, right.
If you're there, I think it will matter.
It depends on how close you are. Because if you're in that Titusville area and you're sort of across from the river, at night it's going to look pretty cool. I mean, it's still going to look really cool.
I don't know if you'll get the, like, I mean, it won't be like a Falcon 9 because it's going to be just exhaust. Because the RS-25s don't,
but it's going to be
like,
really bright compared to.
I think I guess it will be. Yeah, it should be. I need to watch a shuttle launch at night and see how.
No, it's still.
It'll be like,
it'll
look the same. You should be able to see it pretty well. I feel like for photos and video, especially for non-NASA photos, video, because the thing that they talked about that they NASA wants it during the day, like they would prefer during the day. But they're not going to give up launch opportunities to have it during the day, because they can use infrared cameras and whatnot to get the views they need, just to see some. But they would rather, I think they have better tracking and whatnot, for this kind of stuff for during the day.
Yeah.
But
makes sense.
And for all the people who don't have the fancy infrared, videos, like, ourselves,
or if you want just like iPhone video, right, daytime is going to be way better.
It would be great to like see it during the day. Photos will look way better during the day, at least in the sky, so they don't go to like midday until like later in the window. So I guess we have to think of how much we think it's gonna not delay on the or delay in the first.
It's gonna I'll put money on Vegas right now. It's gonna delay.
Oh, I'll be there next week, so I'll do that for you. I'm sure you can bet on that over in Vegas. So, But yeah, so that's kind of the whole deal with Armored One. It's now we gotta wait. Now we have to come up with more news every week because to fill this spot. I hate it. This was so much easier.
I know, but we lose all the jokes. We lose all the extra news.
We lose our
whatever else we were filling Artemis time with.
Update from last week. Last week we talked about Dart smacking in, but we recorded that like the day that it was happening, like a few hours beforehand.
Yeah. Yep.
So now it's happened. Actually it has happened this time, and it was actually, I don't know what I was expecting. What were you expecting when you saw Dart? Like, I don't know what I was expecting either when I saw the stream.
So great question. Number one, I just want to key back to something that you'd mentioned last week when we talked about it. Media was all over this because they were streaming it live as it was happening on like CNN and all the other large media outlets, which was kind of cool to see. Mm-hmm. So definitely a win for us space nerds out there, right? Because we broke through the mainstream a little bit more there. But yeah, so expectations. So I think in my mind, I was totally expecting like Armageddon, Hollywood, like, you know, you're going to see it hit and then you're going to cut to the other camera and then explosion and then, you know, whatever else, right? But really,
we kind of got that.
To an extent.
We kind of got that. There was a second camera for that.
But in real time, all you were seeing was what we're actually watching right now with this for listeners. There is, you know, tons of footage out there of this, and we're watching a GIF right now of it happening in real time where it just kind of gets closer and closer, and then it just goes black.
It's like, I don't know. So, like, I kind of, like, didn't really watch the full thing. Like, it's during the night, and that's usually when, like, I'm having dinner and whatnot. So, like, we were doing things, and all of a sudden, I looked, I'm like, oh, like, it's happening in, like, 15 minutes. All right, I'm on TV. Let me just flip over to the NASA channel and see what's the coverage like, because I wasn't expecting much of a coverage, I guess. Like, when NASA does their own, I mean, when it's a NASA mission, they kind of pull it out, but it was Applied Physics Lab, which, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I just, maybe it was just, like, I wasn't given the benefit of the doubt of, like, being able to have do a high production, like, live stream of it. But I showed up, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, they have interviews and, like, all right, is this kind of like a countdown going till impact? Mm-hmm. All right, cool. There's no Bruce Willis, but you know, it's pretty good. And all of a sudden, like, the video, I was expecting video wise, I was expecting just low quality photos. Like, it's gonna be all pixelated. It's not gonna be anything crazy. But also, you just kind of see like the two dots, and it starts getting bigger. And I'm like, man, this is kind of cool. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is like super high resolution. I wasn't expecting that. And all of a sudden, like, you're just watching it, and all of a sudden, red, like red screen. I got like a partial image. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, that's awesome. Like, I want to rewatch that. So I was happy I tuned in live. Like, I wasn't really expecting, like, I don't know. Like, it felt like it was a really cool mission, really awesome mission. But, like, I just, for some reason, like, wasn't excited to turn into the live stream because I don't know why, but I was. I'm glad I did.
One of the cooler parts was definitely watching the control room, because as it was going, they simultaneously had, you know, obviously some cameras in the control room. So seeing everybody,
that's always the best part.
Super excited, which is cool because, you know, deep down inside, we're all like, blow it up, I wanna blow be there. Blow it up, right?
You also all want to be in that same room with them.
But like, I think my favorite thing, kind of going back to what you were saying about how much higher of a resolution you got than what we were totally expecting, is that right there, that last image before it actually impacts. It's
you
pretty cool.
See the pebbles. And I didn't really think about this, like, that they didn't really know what the asteroid was made of. So now they actually get to see. And I guess to me, I don't know. I guess I didn't really, it didn't, I don't know, maybe it was lost on me on that part, because I guess we saw, like, the other two missions. I can't just blank on it, but like Ryugu and 67P, like those other comets and asteroids that, like, they've either retrieved material from or have done some sort of mission with, and you get to see up close and it looks like this. So I'm like, oh, I guess I was expecting that, but then it did it on me, like, oh yeah, like, we never really saw what this thing looks like, so this is our first time getting an image of the thing we're about to just smack into. Which is kind of interesting. And you mentioned about the second camera.
Yep. I was going to just note on this. We don't really know the scale. I mean, at least from this image, right?
Oh,
it looks like, this looks like asphalt. Like, you'd walk out on the street and just look down and that's what it is. But it could be bigger and it obviously could be smaller, but we have no idea what the scale reference is.
Idea. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's a good point. Like, kind of, it's not really sure what the scale is of this. I mean, also, we don't know how close they were. Like, yeah. Imagine this was taken from, like, I don't know how fast it was moving, but it was moving a couple things a second. And I think it was taking, like, I think it's like, it was like 30 seconds of delay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think, like, and I don't remember what, how fast. I think it was taking a photo maybe 10 seconds or something. This could have been, yep, like from a mile up.
Right, right. Like, exactly.
This could have been from like pretty far away. And we don't know what,
yeah, and that could be like, oh, you're looking at like a football field or something there.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, I, like, not that big, but yeah, I think, I actually think they said that this one was the size of like a football stadium. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. So interesting to see, like, I mean, yeah, that's weird. But yeah, like every telescope was trained on this thing, and there was a little, there was a ride along called from the Italian Space Agency to take photos on the side. So you got your side image. So Hubble got, and Webb got images of it, which are cool. You can kind of see the, I like it. You can see Webb has the spider web, the six refractions instead of the flake. It even has that on like the impact. Webb's looks kind of demonic. The red.
It totally looks like something out of Stranger Things.
Yeah, it does. It looks kind of like slightly terrifying, but yeah, the Italian Space Agency had a CubeSat, and you got to see. I mean,
that's cool.
It kind of looks like we just destroyed an asteroid. Why? Because we can. So many memes are going around afterwards about it. Just like, oh look, who is this thing buzzing by? Oh, it's a friend. Smacks into the asteroid. Yeah, the asteroid just like did nothing to us, and we're just pelting it with this like massive with the spacecraft. Not massive, but like
that's
spacecraft.
Cool. Like, that image is cool right there.
That was my favorite.
Like, it almost looks like we just
it looks like we just absolutely destroyed this asteroid for no reason. Yeah. Well, for a reason, but for no reason for that asteroid.
It's for the future of our species.
Thank you, Dimorphos, for your sacrifice. But that was last week. That was a DART Impact.
Yep. So super, you got some pretty cool images. Definitely super cool images. To go out there, watch the video and some of the coverage, and check out these images for yourself.
Tomorrow, or technically, I guess today. Recording this on Tuesday night. I think I want to publish this on like Wednesday morning. So technically today. But when we're recording tomorrow, Crew 5 is launching.
Yep.
So that happened. That's the first time we're going to be having a Russian on the space, on the Crew Dragon, launching. Mm-hmm. It's the first time a Russian's launched on a U.S. rocket since 2000, since the space shuttle retired. I don't remember which one was actually the last crew rotation. But it was towards the end, and that's launching tomorrow. So all day coverage is going to be happening on NASA. Yep. Like do you know what time is launch?
Right now it is scheduled for 12 p.m. on the dot. I'll actually be on site for this one to check it out. So hopefully there's no delays. Weather is pretty good right now. I mean, it's actually been even cool. I don't want to jinx it, but it's been feeling pretty nice out here today.
It's been 50, 60s up here in Wisconsin. Oh, so wow. I'm excited. I'm actually, I like, crispy. Yeah, just the leaves are turning. So I gotta get my drones out and get some drone footage, but
nice.
I think they start streaming like, is it like 8 or 9 hours beforehand?
Yeah, it'll be streaming. And I'm sure SpaceX will have their own stream kicking off pretty early as well.
Yeah, that's when, NASA and SpaceX will start at the same time. Oh man, I'll think about coverage for tomorrow. Yeah, it's gonna be an early morning for me. Can't wait. So yeah, that launches tomorrow. We'll all be there for coverage. Oh, that's gonna be so two NASA astronauts. Interesting. And the commander of the flight, and I just blanked on her name, so let me quickly look up the commander. She if I remember correctly, she was supposed to command a Boeing flight. Do you not know this? Do you want me to educate you?
Yes, I did not know this.
Okay. It is, she's the pilot, I believe. Yes. So she was expected to be on the first crewed flight for Starliner, but delays have pushed that back to maybe beginning of next year.
Hopefully. Sounds like
Artemis. Yeah. So, everyone's been asking if Artemis will launch before Starship, but no one's asking if Artemis will launch before
Boeing's kind of like, I guess Boeing's gonna launch
both, but Yeah, well, I guess technically Boeing's launching, but Starliner, I guess. Yeah, so she was supposed to be on Starliner as the pilot, and so now she's going to be she's now the pilot of Crew 5. She's going to be the first Native American woman to go to space.
Awesome.
Which is really awesome to see that happening. And so, yeah, who else is? Let me go back to the crew. We have Jessica Sandra from NASA. He is the commander. we're going to butcher. Let's ready for butchering some names. Koichi Wakata from Japan. He's going to be the first flight mission specialist from JAXA. And then Anna Kikina. I think you pronounced that name. She is the second mission specialist from Roscosmos. So
awesome.
That is happening tomorrow. Super. I mean, always exciting to see that. They're going to bring the there's seven on the space station right now, so that'll bring them up to 11 for a short period of time before Crew 4 comes back down. So yeah,
like a party.
That happens tomorrow. It's a part. Oh, it is. It was nothing. It was as crazy as when Axiom 1 was up there alongside all the
yeah.
rivals. That was a crowded space station. So yeah. But yeah, so we were talking about Roscosmos on there. So Roscosmos actually has a new chief. Dmitry Rogozin was the longtime chief of Roscosmos, the Russian space agency. He was relieved and replaced with, let me see if I'm gonna get this one right, Yuri Borisov. Throwing that one up there to the gods of who knows what. For pronouncing names, he actually Rogozin was notorious for being very like anti-West, anti-American,
yeah.
especially, which is weird for an agency that's so closely tied to NASA.
Yeah, I think, and it really started to show its ugly horns right during when the war broke out in
when Ukraine. Yeah, when Russia like did a full scale invasion of Ukraine. That's when it really got ugly. I mean, he was
yeah.
When he was part of, he was before he joined Roscosmos, he was the director of the defense or something, defense minister, I think, when they annexed Crimea. And so he got sanctioned. So he's actually not allowed to come to the United States, which is a really weird, apparently collaboration between NASA and Roscosmos was really hard with him because he couldn't mm-hmm. come to the United States. They had to go to Russia. But yes, the new. And it's funny, he is also the defense minister, got demoted down to Roscosmos, the chief of Roscosmos. He actually made something kind of nice. He was talking about how, politicians have invaded science and interfere with the knowledge, and knowledge is needed not just for Russians, but for all humanity. It's actually a really nice thing to hear coming from
refreshing.
The chief after years of kind of ugliness. And who knows what's going to come, what happens in the coming months and days and what or mm-hmm. years and whatnot with him as a head. But at least for now, we get this kind of nice little
back on
nice
track little a little bit, right?
Yeah. Back on. Yeah. At least for now,
with the
who knows what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who comes on for that? So you want to talk about our main topic?
Yeah. Let's dive into it. So
this was yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No. After you.
this was the left hook that came out of nowhere last week. And it was really funny how this happened. It was Thursday. It was like Thursday morning, and all of a sudden a few reporters got emailed. I didn't get this email, but a few reporters got emailed from NASA. Like, hey, heads up for a press conference today, which they never do. Like, I've never seen them ever like give a heads up to people. They just drop a press release and say, hey, this is happening. And then Eric
Berger, they must have wanted the coverage then.
They really wanted people to come to this. And Eric Berger from Ars Technica saw that, tweeted that out and said, like, I'm hearing this is a big deal, which got everyone really like confused. I think, like, what is this press conference happening by NASA? That's like, what are they announcing? And then finally the actual participants of the press conference came out, and there was people from Hubble mm-hmm. and Dr. Z Zurbuchen from NASA's science director and associate administrator for science, and SpaceX, and Jared Isaacman from Polaris, for the Polaris program.
Yeah.
So we're all just sitting here like, okay, are they like going to do something with Hubble for Polaris. It turns out SpaceX and NASA have agreed to a Space Act agreement, which is pretty much kind of like an agreement to do something, pretty much as agreement. There's an unfunded study, so SpaceX is going to be doing this on their own dime, to see if SpaceX is capable of boosting the Hubble into a more stable orbit. That was like kind of like a cool thing to come into Thursday. Like, we were all kind of it was kind of a slowish week. I mean, we had some days that then popped up, but all of a sudden, like, nothing huge that came out. And all
poor
of a sudden,
Hubble's been taking it on the chin the last like couple months ever since Webb got into the got launched, and like everybody's just like, and Hubble was this, and now this is Hubble.
And Hubble is probably one of the most important pieces of scientific equipment like out there. Like, there's very few things out there that like
in our lifetime.
Yeah, that has changed like humanity's look at of space. The images that Hubble came out with when it first got launched were just incredible, even though they were a little blurry. But it's kind of been, it's not like it has gone away from relevance. Like, it's still doing a lot of science alongside Webb. One thing they mentioned during the when they announced the first images from Webb was Hubble is still going to be doing a lot of like checking with Webb. So Webb takes a photo, they say they discover something, and then Hubble will kind of like do the same observation. So it's actually kind of important to keep this thing around, and they're down a lot of equipment. Like, I think they're down the one computer for all their tasks, and they've lost a couple of gyros, and it's like, it's shown its age.
Yeah.
So this mission, like, is kind of a big deal if they can pull it off. So Jarek Isaacman was talking about, of course, the Polaris program being funded by Jarek Isaacman, who flew on Inspiration 4. He's like the founder of a payment system. So he's a billionaire out there doing that kind of stuff. And he made an interesting quote. He said he wanted to leave Hubble better than when they got there, which I think NASA were trying to play down what they were trying to do. Right. They said, this is not a servicing mission. Like, we don't want to call this a servicing mission because that can mean a lot of things. Like, it's just a study. We're just looking into this. And Isaacman's just there just going, man, no. we want to do this thing better. Like, does that mean he wants to do a spacewalk?
It sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like they want to do some, obviously, big-time repairs and possibly some upgrades, right, to get it closer to, I don't want to say to Webb, but, you know, like, at least to now.
Back to where
technology.
It's glory.
Right,
what it could do.
Everything,
I mean, it could still do the same thing.
30 plus years old, right? Or 40 plus like, years old.
Give it kind of like a fresh life or fresh look on life. And right now, like, kind of, I think the big thing for it is it needs to be boosted up into a higher orbit. Otherwise, there's a chance it won't survive to the 2030s. There's a chance, but it's not a big chance. It's not like, I think it's like something like a 50% chance they'll deorbit within the next 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah, so they want to boost it up into orbit.
So Polaris, that's like you get out there, right? You launch a Cybertruck, and then you just put it on the tow hitch, and you just, like, tow it up.
Is that what they're doing? It's just going to be a Cybertruck up there towing it and giving it a tow?
The one and only one that's available, right? It's going to go to space.
It's the only one with the cracked window and everything. So yeah, the opportunities for this, of course, there's it was a docking port on the back of the Hubble. So when Shuttle did their missions, they had the cannon arm they could attach onto the Hubble, and they could bring that in.
Right.
There were another arm that astronauts would attach to and move around, because Hubble it's weird. Hubble was designed to be serviced, but also not designed to be serviced at the same time. Like it has like easy ways of opening it up and like changing out equipment, but there's not like handrails and like ways of like moving around it. So, how SpaceX could actually do like a spacewalk to kind of like maybe upgrade things, is very much yet to be known. Like, it would be very hard for them to do that possibly. But they do have on the last mission, they did install a port on the back, and that port is very similar to the international docking adapter, which is what Dragon and Starliner uses for the International Space Station. So there is a way that they could attach to that, not on the front of Dragon. It would have to be possibly on the rear, or they'd have to make a lot of changes.
Do you think this is a possibility for like a starship type thing where they need a bigger craft?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I could totally see
Elon saying, all right, here we go. Here's Starship, bigger craft, and now we have like opposable arms and, you know, like similar to like what they had in Shuttle.
That's totally possible. I think the biggest hardest thing would be is it all depends on the study and like what they find possible. Because sure. Another option for them is also just totally. I don't know. I'm sure NASA, SpaceX won't see this as a viable option because it won't be them. But Northrop Grumman has the mission extension vehicle. It's already been used a few times on payloads out in geostationary orbit, where it just attaches onto the rear of a satellite, because the biggest thing that goes wrong with satellites out in geostationary orbit is they run out of fuel. So you just go out there with another engine with more fuel tanks and just attach it under the back, and now you have a new vehicle. That's something that they've it's totally possible of doing with this as well, just having something robotically attach to the end. So maybe there won't even be a crew. So this is totally, it's a study. Like, that's like the biggest thing to take away from this is it's sure. just a study. Yeah. So
still pretty cool.
But yeah. It's pretty cool. It's super cool. Like, I was just something like, I don't think anyone really expected to come out of last week. And now we get to talk about that. Eisenman did an interview with Christian Davenport from the Washington Post on Monday. And he talked a lot about, the Washington Post is a lot of more general stuff. They don't really get into too many details, but it was a lot about Polaris and the future of space and stuff like that. So he talked a little bit about Hubble, but he tried getting some details out of like crew, like who would you want crew wise, because NASA probably wouldn't want someone who's very experienced, probably do the spacewalk.
Yeah, they want some vets on there.
And there is an astronaut, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was on the last servicing mission, STS-125, if I remember correctly. He's still an active astronaut. So there's a possibility they could pull up maybe like an older astronaut who's probably now in management rather than space launches, to kind of pull him out, be like, yo, you're going back up there. Your services, you thought you were done. You're servicing Hubble one more time. Get back out there. It'd be like space. Oh, it'd be like Space Cowboys. I don't know how old he is. He could actually be quite young. He could still be totally fit. But I'm just imagining someone from STS-125, like to be like management and hasn't really worried about going to space. And now he's sitting down in that and office goes, hey, you gotta go to space.
Yeah.
Or pull some people out of retirement. Like, hey, get back on your feet. Let's go.
Right.
They all show up just like, yeah, and they're just you gotta do some laps around the gym. So yeah, that's a possibility with Hubble going into the next decade. Probably we probably won't hear about this for a while.
I mean, it's obviously a cool thing. I wonder. I mean, obviously Elon and Isaacman, you know, they're starting to build a pretty interesting relationship through SpaceX. So it'll be interesting to see sort of Jared's progression through SpaceX over the next decade and what involvement he starts to have with them as, you know, this commercialized, you know, I could totally see Elon, you know, almost handing over some keys to him to sort of drive some of the ship.
I could totally see Polaris as like if Axiom is the commercial, not, I don't want to say the commercial wing, but like the commercial buddies of NASA. Like if you see like Axiom, they have a lot of private, they've done a private astronaut mission. They're looking at building a commercial space station. So like they're highly, not favored, but highly looked upon by NASA for their commercial needs. I could totally see Polaris being that favorite kind of like company or entity for SpaceX to be like, yo, we need astronauts, but we don't want to deal through NASA. Polaris is like, well, these three people have flown before on Polaris programs, like, you know, maybe they just keep going,
or they'll start grooming more astronauts.
They try doing more and more. Like right now it's just a Polaris Dawn. It's just one flight to do a spacewalk, and then you have the second mission, which is possibly the Hubble service, like Hubble boosting, Hubble type-esque, whatever that would entail mission. And then the third mission would be the first crewed flight of I think they said they wanted to do the first crewed flight of Starship, or just a crewed flight of Starship. So,
but the two of them, I mean, like, just from that, like a, from just like I guess entrepreneur to entrepreneur, and obviously space enthusiast to space enthusiast, they both seem to have similar goals as far as like what they want to do. You know, they line up. It seems like they line up and check a couple of boxes along the way. So it'll be, yeah, it'll just be interesting to see what their relationship kind of blossoms into over the next decade.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. Hot takes.
Uh-oh.
You go first. I'm not really hot. Are these hot takes this week? I don't. They seem pretty chill.
No, this one's not. I mean, this one's a hot. This is like a, this could be like a hot take forever. But anyway, so I'll go first. So the an article was published a couple days ago saying that the FCC is now taking space junk seriously. So for anybody out there that doesn't know what space junk is, it's just basically a bunch of old satellites that don't work anymore, or parts of whatever has gone up into space that's sort of decommissioned, or, you know, maybe has run out of battery and is just kind of floating around in orbit, clogging up the orbit ways. The orbit lanes, as you will. So now the FCC is, they've already had a law. Well, they haven't, the article actually says that they haven't enforced the law. It hasn't been like an actual law. It's just sort of like a, you know, hey guys, you have 25 years to, you know, do something with whatever you're putting up there. Within 25 years, if you don't, then, you know, you got to take it down. But they haven't enforced that. So because of that, a lot of stuff is just kind of collected up in space. And now they're actually pushing to pass a law that gives a 5-year lifespan to a satellite or whatever else X piece of space junk that goes up in orbit. So they're really pushing hard for that. So my hot take is, this isn't something new, people. Like, this is kind of how we are as people. Like, we kind of just like muck up stuff and just leave it behind. Unfortunately, as a species, we're just kind of bad at this. This is specifically U.S. related space material, so it's not. Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything that's, you know, launched by any other country as of right now. So this is strictly U.S. So all those broken Starlink satellites, if there's any up there, they need to come down in the next 4 or 5 years.
And I don't think Starlink was really ever the problem, and I know
no. Also, but that's the, I mean, that's probably the highlight right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, good on FCC for China actually doing something about this. Right. I mean, even if it's not huge, and I know there's some backlash from Congress and about whether or not they have the authority to do that. I mean, when they made the 25-year rule, there was some of the backlash, and then they, but. I mean, at least someone's doing something. Like, I mean, there hasn't been any rules. There hasn't been anything passed by Congress, and there hasn't been anything. I mean, I think we're going to come to that point eventually if the FCC didn't do something, especially Space Council without it. But at least they did something.
At least someone.
I'm happy for it.
Up.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure Marie Bajah, who's the chief scientist over at Privateer, he's like the big advocate for this stuff. I'm sure he's like cheering on. But he also wants to make sure that, you know, probably he wants to bring stuff down too. So,
yeah, I know. And I know one of the big topics, like, and this is where Starlink kind of, I guess, fits into this piece of the puzzle. A lot of sort of environmentalists and, you know, just people that are naturists, if you will, complain about Starlink because it's, you know, obviously creating a bunch of debris up there, but it's also polluting the sky at night with its lights. And that's sort of like the fear that one day you're going to go out and it's just going to be like, you know, a city, but you're
Taco Bell.
In the sky. Yes.
A Taco Bell ad.
Eventually
made out of Starlink.
It's eventually
going to
happen.
Oh, just get.
But anyway, yeah.
Facebook
so
ads.
There's
Facebook portal ads being out there. Can't get enough of those.
Oh, my God. There's going to be a bunch of interesting articles. So keep an eye out for more on this topic, because it's definitely, like you said, it's eventually going to get brought up in Congress and it'll heat up.
For me, did you watch Tesla AI Day?
I did. Oh, I didn't watch it live. I didn't watch it live. I watched the cut down.
I watched it live until I got bored and then I turned it off. There was a lot of information, but Tesla bot. So Tesla bot
indirectly space related, right?
Is, I think, is 100% space related. I think this is definitely one of the bigger things that could be used. Oh, first of all, way more. I was impressed by what they announced because I was legit just expecting like maybe hands and like maybe some arms at the most. Yeah, just some. Hi, I'm TeslaBot. Turning. I'm putting into light bulbs right now.
I actually thought it was going to do the heart at one point because that was like the,
I was the, image,
the marketing image that they never did it, but that's the marketing image that they have.
Well, it danced like Elon, so I mean, you can't. That's typical of Tesla, but of Elon. But robotics have taken such a huge turn in recently, and I'm impressed that that Tesla has done so much. I think it's been like a year or something like that. That they said like
it hasn't been that long. They're
gonna have a prototype and they delivered. There's a prototype.
Yeah.
So, the need for having robots on other planets for when we push and start doing more and more exploration, especially of, I mean, even of the moon or even of Mars, like launching that many people is going to be hard. Like it's just finding enough people to do it. I'm sure there's plenty of people finding enough qualified people to do it. I don't think we're going to have problems finding people who want to go to Mars. I think we're going to have an issue of trying to find qualified people to go to Mars.
Dude, you literally just described everything in life. Like if you said X is available for X people to do, everybody raises their hand, right? But who's qualified to actually do it?
Who can actually go to Mars?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why do you want to go to Mars? Oh, because you're not going to Mars.
Exactly.
Just because you like going to Mars. No. Robots, I think, are going to be probably fairly important to have.
An actual place where it's like, oh, this could actually work and we could send them first to, test or
build a habitat. Like, what you want people to live in Starship for like a few months as you build like a permanent habitat on Mars.
Yeah.
Like someone needs to build that stuff beforehand. And if robotics become advanced enough to be able to do something like that, like that's totally a possibility. I mean, and it looks like that's the goal of Tesla. There's also Boston Dynamics that has stuff, but that's, I don't know. Like, it's like Atlas or something like that it's called, but
dude, I feel like they're so far behind.
I feel okay. They're so far. They were so far ahead until I think Friday. Although we don't know how well TeslaBot can actually do things in the real world, even though they showed some stuff. Right. Like, sure. I feel like they're both two different
like theories of approach, right? Also, like,
yeah, exactly. Like, so I guess my thing is TeslaBot, cool. It's a Tesla thing, but I think there's a lot of space relevance in that for 100%
for future years. Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to see that. go
ahead. I'll be interested to see how if this thing ever goes to like space and they launch it, because Russia has sent some sort of has sent a robotic type astronaut to space, didn't really do much. NASA and GM partnered up for AstroBot, I think it's called, and that was, it was a thing. It existed. They did some experiments, but it didn't really do that well. So I'm interested to see if this thing, like, if it crosses over the SpaceX and so it goes to space.
Yeah, I mean it. I mean, it's definitely going to cross over, right?
Everything is at Elon Musk Incorporated.
Well, yeah, crosses over for sure. But I mean, having the robot do some of the, and not to take, we don't want to take jobs away from people, but like some of the manual labor tasks that are just like impossible for humans to do on their own. I think is definitely going to be a key play in the beginning, but let's talk about who took the L on this. What happened to Honda's Osmo? That thing was
forgot about that,
12 or 15 years ago or whatever it was, looking at that thing, oh my god, this thing is the future, and then it just disappeared.
And what's the name of the, there's a robot, is it Sophia, the like the humanoid, like,
is that the one in Silicon Valley in the show?
I think it's in the show.
It was like
it got citizenship, I think, in like the United Arab Emirates or something like that. Like, I think it physically actually got a citizenship. It's weird. Like, it actually can hold conversations. Now, I'll put that on, like, the head of a Tesla bot, and that would be creepy. That'd be terrifying. Teach
Yeah,
it,
that's
figure out how
terrifying.
to run on that thing, probably. Oh, okay. We're getting too far. That's, oh,
Although
all right.
I will say they did a pretty good job. This is again, sort of life imitating art. I felt some iRobot vibes in
Oh,
that,
so much.
like
It's
the
so
Gen 1
much.
version of the iRobot that they
Yeah.
get the ones that get stuffed in the containers. Yeah, it was totally. I was feeling that when I was watching it. I was like, this is feeling a little like iRobot-ish. I wonder if this thing has the three laws.
Oh, yeah. Or Will Smith will come in out to save us.
And smack
So,
it.
and smack. Oh, man. All right. That's it for this week's episode of the Space Explored podcast. Of course, you can listen to us all on the on all major podcast networks. You can Apple, Google, and Spotify, and Overcast, whatnot. You can listen to us at our YouTube channel. You can watch the live stream on our YouTube channel at Space Explore YouTube channel or at spaceexplore.com. You can follow me at Twitter. I'll be tweeting out all the stuff for Crew 5 to later today, I guess, or tomorrow, whenever you see this. And that will be at Seth Kirk, SethKurk. And you can follow Jared, who will be on site tomorrow at.
At Hyperlight, HYPRLYTE. And yeah, I'll be sharing photos on Instagram and Twitter as well of the launch. Should be a good one.
Awesome. We'll see you guys all next week.